Something else we have in common, flying on the airlines and listening to the airlines' announcements and trying to pretend to ourselves that the language they're using is really English. Doesn't seem like it to me. About this time, someone is telling you to get on the plane. Get on the plane, get on the plane. I say, you, I'm getting in the plane. Let Evel Knievel get on the plane.
And I was ugly, but I was a kid and never got any girls either. Now, one girl told me, come on over, there's nobody home. I went over, there was nobody home.
Because we're all getting older. I don't care. You're all sitting here. It's a very young crowd. Oh, she's talking about death. Let me tell you something. It happens to we all go through the same thing. At 40, you begin to lose your eyesight. I don't care who you are. You can't read the birthday card. At 50, the memory starts to go, oh, let's go see that movie. Oh, you know the one. Oh, you know what I mean. At 60, you start to fart. You just fart. Yes. And at 70, you lose your sense of smell. So between 60 and 70, it is a terrible time.
You're Chinese, right? Chinese? This girl here? If you're not, get your eyes fixed.
State Player on 720 WGN. Very happy you could join us on this early Sunday morning. 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to jump right in as I have some very special guests on the show tonight. So the art of stand-up comedy had its roots in the late 19th century in vaudeville houses, music halls, and minstrel shows, and in the 20th century in theaters and nightclubs. And the legendary names are endless, from the early days of Jack Benny, Bob Hope, George Burns, Moms Mabley, to the 50s and 60s where stand-up really broke ground with George Carlin, Alan King, Don Rickles, Bob Newhart, Lenny Bruce, Jonathan Winters, Johnny Carson, Bill Cosby, into the 70s with the likes of Rodney Dangerfield, Red Fox, David Letterman, David Steinberg, Robert Klein, to the 80s and 90s with Jerry Seinfeld, Steve Martin, Jay Leno, Robin Williams, to contemporaries like Chris Rock, Louis C.K., and Amy Schumer. And hanging out with us tonight to break down the greatest stand-up comedians of all time, I invited four very funny people and very familiar voices here on WGN that also have a second life doing stand-up, and that's the one and only Steve Cochran, Bill Leff, Patty Vasquez, and Brian Noonan. What's up, everybody?
Hi, Dave.
Hello.
How you doing, man? Dave.
What is happening? So all your names are, of course, synonymous with the ones I just read in the introduction.
Sure. Absolutely. So true.
Only that there's a first and a last name. That's how they're synonymous.
No, it's not true. A lot of people confuse me with Moms Mabley. I get that all the time.
Nice. That's true. I thought you were Moms for the first 6 months I knew you.
Well, I want to start with you, Steve. You know, Bill told me off the air that he thinks your influence in comedy was Shecky Green. Is that true?
Yes. Well, obviously. I think that's clear. I think these guys would probably share the same sort of perspective, except for Patty, who's very young. She's 23.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's Pryor, it's Carlin, and regardless of the current spate of news of the last couple of years, it's Cosby. Those are the three giants.
You know, and Peoria, first of all, Richard Pryor came from Peoria, which surprised me. I didn't know he was an Illinois guy. He hit the stage performing for the troops when he was in the Army. I mean, that's how Richard Pryor got his feet wet in comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and going to see Richard Pryor, like, live on the Sunset Strip and all his concert films back in the day, that was really an event. You know, people look forward to that. You don't see that too much anymore, but his stuff was just unbelievable.
He's the best ever. There's nobody that was ever more born to do stand-up than Richard Pryor was. Bill, I think you and I have talked about this off the air as well. But he can make the F word sound like, you know, it's something your grandmother should say just because it was so perfectly placed.
Yeah.
And, it was just, he's brilliant. He could do characters, he could do anything.
With both Richard Pryor and George Carlin, there was a version of them, the early versions of them, were strictly by the book. They played by the rules.
The hippy-dippy weatherman and Ed Sullivan.
Yeah. And then they both realized, both Carlin and Pryor realized, if they were really going to make their mark in stand-up comedy, you got to play by your own rules. And they did it, and they did it fantastically.
You can't equate that with what you saw later when he came into his own. It's amazing.
But, Steve, you mentioned Bill Cosby. You know, I know there's so many people want to keep him off lists now. You know, when they talk about one of the best shows, comedy family shows of the 80s, or best stand-up comedian, you kind of have to separate the two because he did create a great show that has been, you know, at the top of the list for years, but he was also an amazing stand-up.
Yeah, well, I think he still would be. I mean, look, the bottom line is you ought to be doing it in jail. But having said that, he did a storytelling sort of thing at a time when everybody was kind of shticky and, you know, went away for a long time and then came back and did the show, and the show reinvented him. But, Patty, you and I were talking about it a couple of years ago. Did you see him in Michigan, like, 2 or 3 years ago? And
And I didn't want to go because I had already, for years, stopped liking him, the smugness, the condescending, preaching to, you know, to an audience, whether it was on stage or off. And I went to see him at the Laugh Fest in Grand Rapids, and honestly, I did not want to like him. He was unbelievable. He did an hour and 45 minutes, basically on one topic, which was man meeting woman, from Adam and Eve to his first kiss to meeting his wife. And it was really just the best stand-up comedy I've seen live, probably in my life. And I didn't want to like him. But when it comes to Pryor, I think the other thing, too, is that he was so authentic and made himself so vulnerable. I don't think there was stand-up like that, that where someone just basically filleted themselves for an audience the way Pryor did.
Right. And there's only a few people who have followed that model and kept it up. I'm not a huge Louis C.K. fan personally, but I like what he does on stage, and he does a lot of that inside out, I'm so messed up, sort of awkward for a bit to even hear it and watch it, and then delivers it and kills with it. You know, we're talking about Carlin. Carlin was like three different guys. Carlin was a radio guy, and then he was the straight guy Bill was talking about, and at the end, he was really mean. So I think every career has an arc, and all these guys do.
It was like Louisiana, Fort Worth. He was in Hollywood. Jack Burns was his partner, I believe, on the air back then before he went out on his own. But, right, it was countless appearances on Ed Sullivan, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas that kind of brought him into the mainstream, and it was really that raw version you saw when he started doing, you know, live performances in HBO and stuff in the 70s.
Right. Patty touched on this, and Steve did too. The arc, Bill Cosby getting so preachy at the end, and that's what I found with George Carlin, whose early stuff was just phenomenal. And then at the end, it was just angry preaching. It's like, okay, we get it. You don't
political
like the
preaching.
Man, and you don't like this stuff. And it's these guys who are geniuses, and maybe that's just the evolution of their genius. But toward the end, it's like, all right, enough.
Steve, you mentioned to me about Johnny Carson. You know, he's credited for launching the career of so many stand-ups, but really, he was a stand-up himself and doing it really every night for 30 years and kind of an unsung hero in that category.
Yeah, well, you know, I think really underrated as a stand-up, because the best nights for Carson were when he bombed. And he bombed better than anybody. And Jack Benny was one of his idols, and he loved how Jack Benny would take that pause, because Jack Benny wasn't particularly funny. Jack Benny set up everybody else around him.
Yeah.
But he would pause. He'd take that pause, and until you've taken that pause on stage, you don't know how long 2 seconds or 5 seconds or 10 seconds is. And Carson was brilliant at it. If you want to see how good he is as a nightly stand-up comic, watch everybody else that still does it try to do it every night. I mean, Conan's been doing a monologue for 20 years, and he's terrible.
Yeah, that's
and, you know, true. It's really hard to do, and Carson, I think, has always been an underrated stand-up.
Bill, they say that tragedy, out of tragedy sometimes comes comedy. What happened to you exactly?
Oh, so many bad things happened to me.
What happened?
Steve, is this where we play emotional ping pong?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's weird. When I started doing stand-up and I'd be on the road so often, what happens is you're sharing either a condo or a hotel room with another comic or two, and they tell you these awful, awful, awful stories, and I never had any of that ever in my life. I was doing it because my life was really good, and I wanted stand-up to be an extension of that, but I would hear stories about people who go, yeah, I never met my parents. I know I have a mom and dad somewhere. I don't know who they are.
But you hear that in every comedian's autobiography, that is exactly where they came from,
constantly.
And that's how they had to find humor.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was very fortunate. I didn't have that background, but I'd say easily 3/4 of the guys or women that I ever worked with just have a background story with it. You just go, oh, no.
But so you're okay.
I'm fine.
Okay.
Are you sure, Bill?
I'm
sure.
You seem to be overselling it. Yeah, I think I'm okay.
Too much.
Yep.
Now you
I'm totally fine. I'm completely well adjusted.
Yeah, I'll
okay.
show you the test results. Everything's
okay.
good.
All right. You mentioned Bill David Steinberg, too.
Love David Steinberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was one of those guys that every Sunday when the TV guide would come or the TV preview in the paper, I would look through the Tonight Show guests and I would circle the guys I couldn't miss. And David Steinberg and Robert Klein and Albert Brooks were three of those guys that if they were on The Tonight Show, there's no way in the world I was going
to
miss that.
Steinberg was, I think, only second to Bob Hope. He made 130 appearances on The Tonight Show. Yeah, and kind of a Chicago guy, too. University of Chicago.
Second City.
Second City, of course. He made a name for himself in the beginning, though, on Smothers Brothers.
Yeah.
Comedy Hour.
Right.
I think as well.
Right.
And Robert Klein.
Okay.
Yeah, Robert Klein was one of those guys that you never knew. He just seemed to be so dimensional that you never knew during his 8 or 10 minutes whenever he would show up on TV what he would do. It might be songs. It might be observational humor. It might be political. And I just thought, that's perfect to always keep the audience guessing. I love Robert Klein.
He was the first guy to have an HBO special in 75.
Yeah.
Think about how early that is.
And can I say something about Robert Klein? During the waning days of David Letterman's show, he would bring on these guys for one last appearance. And more times than not, they were not good. They were guys that were really funny 15 or 20 years ago.
Friends
didn't
of Dave
do
or
well.
Might
Friends
be.
Of Dave's yeah. from the early days. Yeah. And then Robert Klein comes out and just tears it open, does 15 or 20 minutes of the funniest stuff I've ever seen. And that just shows you how great Robert Klein is.
Yeah. Patty, women who stand up sometimes feel like they have to cite a female comedian as their influence. And I know for you that isn't necessarily the case.
Well, when you'd email me about this, I always have George Carlin was the comic that I would say I listened to the most. I had Carlin on campus playing him. I don't listen to music as much as I listen to stand-up comedy, and that was true in high school. If you got in my car, you would hear his list of dirty words.
That's awesome.
And so he was my favorite growing up. And then, but when it comes to inspiration, who inspired me to grab a microphone, it's Margaret Cho.
Yeah.
And that always surprises comics because a lot of people have sort of developed a distaste for her and the style of stand-up that she does. But she was the first woman that I saw who was kind of telling stories that reflected the way I grew up, both as a daughter of immigrants, my mother is from Mexico, and also the pain of body shaming. And I had never thought it was okay to stand up and say something about that. It was kind of just the par for the course. You just hated your body, and that was it.
I feel you.
Well, yeah, she was real. I mean, she was real.
It was, I saw her, and I was like, oh, I should do that. I mean, it really was an aha moment seeing Margaret Cho. Within a month, I had written my first 5 minutes. And I grew up watching Ellen DeGeneres and Paula Poundstone, but I was just drawn to comedy. To me, funny was always funny. And Carson, too. That was my favorite nights for being able to stay awake. And I saw Roseanne's very first appearance on Johnny Carson and Ellen's. I saw a lot of those. It was just a great, to grow up watching that and obsessed with stand-up comedy.
And I've heard you say before, comedy's the music of life.
It is to me.
Yeah.
That's the rhythm that I really dance to.
David, it's a really underrated and probably the most underrated art form. It's never recognized at the Oscars. It's poo-pooed everywhere. But I can tell you right now, and these guys I know would agree, you can either sing or you can't. You can either dance or you can't. But you're always performing something that's prepared. You don't know fear, and you don't know stupid, I guess, until you've got up on stage in front of a bunch of people who've had a couple of drinks who are looking at you going, make me laugh, monkey. There's nothing harder to do well in show business and in performing arts, period.
When did you first hit the stage, Steve, like when you were first doing stand-up?
I did my senior breakfast in high school, and that's a good crowd to play your first time out because they're not going to give you a hard time.
No, not at all. That's actually a perfect place to play.
Yeah, well, there was a little bit of a rough room, but, it was there, and then wherever I've been radio-wise, I've always done stand-up here and there.
What about you, Bill? What was the first time on stage?
One time in high school, one time in college. And the weird thing about the college one is I went to Columbia College here, and they had a talent day. Like Steve said, it was like a lunchtime performance, and, you could do whatever you wanted. And there's an actor named Scott Adsit who's on 30 Rock.
30 Rock, yeah.
And
Second City.
I hadn't seen Scott in years, and he was there that day, and he said, I still remember all the stuff you did that day.
Wow.
And he went through my set list.
Wow.
It's been 30 years, and he remembered all of it.
That's pretty cool.
I don't know how he did it.
That's pretty cool.
You know what, David? I got to tell you something. Bill is one of the funniest people I've ever seen on stage, and he refuses to do it anymore.
I just asked him about that.
We should publicly shame him into going back up.
Don't do that.
I agree.
I just said that to him. I said
come
that
on, be funny.
I said in the hallway, I said, do you host any events? And he's like, I did that already.
Yeah.
You are.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you.
Patty, what about you? What was the first time on stage for you?
I was actually in grad school at Northwestern when I saw Margaret Cho, and I went to an open mic in February of my first year in grad school, and dropped out of grad school a month later. I was 20.
Wow.
I was 22.
All right. And Brian, how about for you?
Miller Lite sponsored a contest on campus at Southern Illinois, and I thought, well, you know what? I'll try this. And I did the contest, and I won the contest.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. Rest was... Yeah.
History.
Not history, but infamy.
Infamy.
There was a time when I was doing stand-up and Brian was doing stand-up, and he and I would have him be my opening act. And I hope you remember this, Brian. There was a mall tour where they booked us
yes.
in malls and shopping centers
in Indiana
late at night. Like after the malls would close, people would come in the middle of the mall. And that was one of the most fun times I ever had doing stand-up.
Did you get a good crowd?
A huge crowd.
Really?
Yeah.
People love to come to a mall after hours for comedy.
Yep.
It's a big drawing pool.
Yep, that's a good time.
It was fun.
Yeah.
I haven't asked you this, Brian. Who was your influence? George Gobel?
Yeah, George Gobel, because I'm drunk as we speak. But no, it was actually, and Steve brought this up early, no matter what's going on with him now, I grew up listening to Bill Cosby albums. It was Why Is There Air and Baby Coach Wheels and My Brother Russell and all those great albums. And then... Steve Martin's first album came out,
Robin
Williams' first album came out, and I was just hypnotized. But I didn't know you could do this as a job. You know, I didn't know it was a career. I just thought, man, these guys are hilarious, and I would, you know, like Patty said, I'd make my friends listen to them and go, "Have you heard this?" I'd give those records as gifts if I was going to somebody's
awesome.
Birthday. It was like, "Here, you got to hear this. It's just unbelievable stuff."
And you made an appearance on The Tonight Show when they were in Chicago, didn't you? It wasn't stand-up, but were you an actor? What were you doing on stage?
I did a few appearances on The Tonight Show, both in Chicago and L.A., but it was all in sketch stuff.
Okay.
So one was for the now-defunct XFL. I think that lasted about 3 weeks, the XFL.
Okay. All right.
I did an XPGA thing and did a hot dog thing in Chicago and a couple others.
Now, for me, I'm going to say it was definitely Carlin. I love Jonathan Winters in his early days. Rodney Dangerfield. I love, you know, contemporary, I love Dennis Leary, Jerry Seinfeld. But one of the greats to me, and although he doesn't do stand-up, he's still a comedian on stage every night, is Don Rickles. That's who I'm talking to in a little bit. Steve, what are your thoughts on Don?
Well, I know him a little bit. I opened for him a couple of times in Atlantic City when I was probably 23 or 4 years old.
Wow.
And the great thrill of any comedian's life is to have Don Rickles rip you.
Of course. Of course.
You know, that's how you know you've been accepted. And as you know, David, because you talk to him, he's a very sweet man.
Very much.
He doesn't like pants. He doesn't wear pants backstage.
No, he doesn't.
Because
it's so funny you say that.
They get wrinkled.
Yeah, I had to. I actually had to.
It's an old school thing, right? He sits around in his robe, and I've seen him for 30 years off and on, and it's not getting better with age, but the pants are always hanging next to him, and he sits around in his robe while he talks to you. And I was just going to say, David, his daughter married a good friend of mine.
Oh, okay. All right.
So at the wedding, he did 20 minutes and basically ripped everybody at the wedding that came as guests. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
His robe was open, and when I looked at the pictures, his robe was open a little too much. I had to have, like, my creative guy at work, like, close the robe a little bit because
he wanted it. He probably didn't want you to crop it.
No, he probably didn't.
No, that's
intentional.
At that age, you're proud of it.
That's right. Bill and I and Jeff Hoover, Rich Coase, we all went a couple years ago to see Don up in the Pottawatomie Casino and got to go talk to him a little bit backstage. And like you said, Steve, what a sweet guy, very, very humble. And you just said something to me off air about, you know, for a guy that's been doing this 60, 65 years, you know, he says something to us before we left the room. He said, keep my name out there.
Yeah, it was very important to him that night and of late for him to remind people that he didn't want to be forgotten.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself, how could anyone forget a guy who revolutionized the business of stand-up comedy?
Totally.
On paper, when you think about what he's done for 65 years, he goes up in front of a room of strangers and makes fun of them. He makes fun of what they look like and what they believe in. And you go, well, that could never work. But he's made it work. But he's so sure that once he's gone, people won't remember him. And that's not the case.
And, you know, here's a guy that put out Hello Dummy, you know, back in, I think it was 68.
Yeah.
And if you've ever gone and seen him, which I know all of you have, or worked with him, it's the same act.
Yeah, it is.
It's the same show almost.
Yeah.
You know what's great about him? And he still does this in Vegas. I don't know if you had a chance to stay and see the set.
Yeah.
He's doing jokes he did in 1965.
Yes.
He'll look around the room and he'll custom it up.
Yes, he does.
You know, he'll do something for people in the front row that he didn't do last night. And that's a testament to who he is as a pro. There's a great book, and Bill, you and Wendy had on the author of this book, Cliff Nesteroff is his name.
Yeah.
K-L-I-P-H. It's funny, I can't think of the name of the book, but I remembered his name and it's Cliff Nesteroff. But it's a great book on the history of mostly stand up but comedy on stage in general. Bill, do you remember what the book was even named?
I don't remember the title. I feel guilty, but I don't. But I do know that I know who you're referring to. Yeah.
Yeah, K-L-I-P-H, Cliff Nesteroff. If you're into this and you really want to read about it, it's a great take on everybody, men, women, children, from vaudeville till now. And I'd highly recommend it if you're into comedy.
Patty, quick note on Rickles.
Well, I've always loved that he and Bob Newhart, not only is Don Rickles a brilliant comic, but Bob Newhart's one of his best friends, and that just tickles me to no end that those guys hang out. I listened to a lot of Bob Newhart, too, and it's similar style that we were talking about with that pace and that patience with taking pauses. And Bob Newhart's bits about, you know, how bus drivers are taught, and, you know, Abe Lincoln versus Madison Avenue. And there's just so many great albums out there. When Don Rickles talks about being afraid of being forgotten, there's such a wealth of comedy, both online and, you know, and whether it's albums or CDs that people have. It's just great to sit and listen to.
Don always says that being with Bob Newhart's being like being in a room with a dead fly, which is my favorite.
Huge compliment.
How about you, Brian? I'm Don.
Rickles is one of these guys who, despite his wishes to not be forgotten, never will be, because anybody who's studied comedy, anybody who's been a fan of comedy, great comics who are performing now still look at him as a legend. They not only his longevity, but the fact that his appearances get better and better. If I see that he's going to be on a show, I make sure I either stay up or I record that show, because, one, I know time is short. You know, he's not going to be around forever. And every time he's on, it's brilliant. I've never seen him have an appearance on a talk show that was less than stellar. And, you know, I think that's kind of old school mentality for him to think that he'll be forgotten. But there's absolutely no chance that he would ever be forgotten.
And old school, he is the last guy standing, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he kills with guys that aren't old enough to have ever seen him in his prime. Like, he'll go on Fallon now, and Fallon could be his grandson.
Yeah.
And he just crushes it with Fallon the same way he did with Johnny, you know, 35, 40 years ago.
Sure.
By the way, the book I was mentioning is called The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy.
There you go.
That's the book.
There you go.
Ring the bell for the plug. There it is.
There you go.
And, Dave, by today's standards, you know, because you were sitting by me when we saw him in Milwaukee a few years ago, most of what he says is now wrong to say. You know, he'll say, there's a Chinese guy in the front row and he's saying this. There's a black guy in the back row and he's thinking this.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, you can't do that anymore.
He's the only guy that can get away with that.
He's allowed to still do it.
He's allowed to still do it.
Yeah.
All right. My thanks to Steve Cochran. Weekdays 6 to 10, Bill and Wendy, 10 to noon and 1 to 3. Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 11 to 2. Brian Noonan, Sunday nights at 6 and on WGN Plus. Thank you so much. That was a lot of fun, everybody.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Looking forward to Rickles.
All right, my conversation with Don Rickles coming up next on 720 WGN.